KMEZ Turner Salem. Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of Salem History Matters, where we build a bridge between the rich history of the Willamette Valley and our contemporary world so we can all appreciate and value our shared heritage. And today we have the privilege of talking with Merle Roten Reeves and her daughter Christy. Merle is the sister of David Roten, who was one of our first interviews in this series, and we are really happy to have his line continue on our show. Welcome, Merle. Welcome, Christy. We're so glad to have you here.
Good to be here.
Christy, our Christy, why don't you lead off the conversation since you've talked with them before?
Okay, thank you, Deb. Merle, first of all, I would like you to share with us where you were born and your childhood, a few things about your childhood.
Well, you're too young to know about the Deaconess Hospital, but in Salem, Oregon, I was born in the Deaconess Hospital in 1930. I'm 87 years old, and my mother and father, neither one were born in Salem, but my father was a practicing lawyer at that point.
When did your family come to the Valley?
Well, my mother was born in... I knew it a minute ago.
But St. Paul, Minnesota?
Yes, right. But my mother lived with her family in Salem, and she went to... both my parents went to Willamette University, and they're very, very big supporters and participants in Willamette University.
Mm-hmm. So your grandfather homesteaded out in this area, is that correct? Or at least had a big family farm?
Oh, yes. My grandfather Roten, Ezra Roten, as long as I've known, he's owned that farm. I don't know how he acquired it, but it's on the Willamette River. It butts up to Illahee Country Club.
Oh, out the Roberts area,
It's in Roberts, and they, none of our family lived there, but we had two houses there that held families of workers on the farm. And when I was a little, and stuff, it was a Golden Top Dairy.
That's what David talked about.
Right, and I followed my grandfather around as a little girl a lot. And they had big buildings, and they had they were very well known. They had a big room with glass all around it that people came and watched them process the milk. And the Hofstetters had the dairy too. There were two dairies in Salem, and one was Golden Top Dairy, that was us, and then Hofstetters. What was it?
Curly's,
and we were well acquainted with Curly's, and their daughter was one of my best friends also. Small world in Salem.
David mentioned that one of his very first jobs at a very young age was picking prunes.
Yes.
On the family farm. Did you have jobs on the family farm?
I also picked prunes, and I drove, when I was about 10 years old, I drove a hay truck that had a big trailer behind it, and they were throwing the bales of hay in the trailer.
And how old were you when you were driving?
I could have been 10 or 12, but one of my driving experiences is my father and his law partner, Sam Spearstra, established at one point turkeys, and they had it. That was a turkey farm, and so
it was a dairy.
After the dairy, after my father, my grandfather died, and my. But anyway, one of my early experiences was driving around a hay field, a hay pile, or something, learning to drive and killing a turkey, and then. When I got home, and I gave it to the resident, to the worker man, because I probably shouldn't have done that. And so when I got home, my mother was a little upset with me. I didn't bring it home for our dinner. So that was kind of, and I was a tomboy. I told Chris that I had a horse.
Pat.
Pat was my horse, but I don't know if I had her in grade school, but I had her in junior high and through high school. And then after high school, I was going on to college, so we gave it away, I think.
Oh. You drive back and we had ride two, to the...
Oh, yeah, we had two horses at that point. One was supposedly for David, he wasn't as tomboyish as I was, but my mother rode a horse once in a while, too, the littler one.
You'd ride from the house to the farm a few times?
Oh, when I was really spending all extra time at the farm, I was, I don't know, Lee Ierley lived above us, too, by the way, and I'd ride my horse up and visit with his workers in his horse barn.
Ah.
But what my daughter's referring to is it's 6 miles from Salem, and we lived across from what now is South High, and at least two times my friend Beverly Beakey and I rode our horses over Candelaria when it was a not undeveloped area, and down and tethered our horses by our garage in town and visited for a while, and then rode the 6 miles back.
So your home here in Salem was in an area rural and high, that area that where the school, South Salem High is now, you said?
Yes. I was 7 years old when they built that house.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the only two lots remaining. The other houses were older. It's directly across from the entrance of the little theater of Leslie now. South.
It was Leslie then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And the other part of what's now South High was a park. And directly across from our house at that point were two tennis courts. And so when we were growing up with Marv Heater and Leon Gordon and all our neighborhood facing the park, we would play kick the can and use the park. And then at one point, we knew it was going to be a high school at one point.
Mm. All these names that are familiar names in Salem. We noticed that when we interviewed David, too.
At that time, Marv Heater was not your
Marv Heater was always our neighbor, Kristen.
No, when you were growing up.
Oh, no, when I was young, when we were in school.
Playing kick the can, that wasn't
That was when I was in grade school in junior high.
Mm-hmm. So what grade schools did you attend?
Well, you're getting into lots of subjects here. because that's, that's interesting because I went to McKinley Grade School, but my father went to McKinley Grade School at the end of High Street, and it was a Red Cross hospital, I think, before that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And
yes.
So then David and I went to McKinley, and then this is a whole other subject, but Christy and her family now live in that house.
Oh, your family's still in the family house.
My parents had built that when I was 7 years old, and we raised Chrissy and her sister Susie in that house, and then it was out of the family for 4 years, and then we talked Chrissy and Jim into coming back to the
out of the family between
about 4 years.
My grandparents didn't. They chose to, they sold it, and then my parents bought it back 4 years later.
Yes.
So.
Oh, and then she and her sisters were raised in that same house. And then that's when we had the neighbors, Marv Heater and Leon Gordons, and Marv was a coach several places. He's well known.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leon Gordon's family had the most prominent pharmacy in town, downtown.
Right. Mm.
But we were a block of young children and our dogs and
wonderful way to grow up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it was.
So Christy, since you live in that house now, what year was it built?
1937.
1937.
Yes, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And is it on the historic register?
No, it's not. I suppose we could consider it. We mm-hmm. just haven't done that. Yeah.
Well, it's a classic house. It's called a Connecticut
farmhouse.
But it's my mother had a friend whose family lived back east, and she had my mother had her friend Helen Laporte bring the plans for this house. It was very unusual at that point, and it's three stories high. But it also has a master bathroom, which is a big big deal then.
Unusual then.
And then the Oregonian, I'm proud of this too, the Oregonian picked it out, the Portland Oregonian. And there's an album about how unusual this house is. It has little cubby areas, and it has a special little, it was very custom made.
Well, it sounds like another program that we can cover.
Well, you really
could.
I could
tour the house and talk about the architecture of it.
Well, you really could, and we still have the plans, I think.
Oh, that would be
we do have the plans.
Because it is a part of Salem history.
Well, but the interesting thing that people, we don't talk about it, and, well, we do when we get started, obviously, but my parents built this house with loving care. And it's on two lots, and one is upper lot, and the house is there, and then the lower yard, and it has a rock wall in front. And it's a very, it's our family's favorite house.
Yeah.
And my father, after, when it wasn't in the family house, he used to drive through the alley and slow down even. You know,
that's great.
Very special.
Remember, Christy, do you remember who the contractor was, the builder of that home?
Well, Jeff Stewart, I think, was a part of it.
Okay.
And his father was in charge of the YMCA at that point, and Jeff Stewart.
Okay.
Yeah. Somewhere on the plans there might be.
Okay. Oh, I'm sure on the plans it would say the architect and the builder would be interesting because we have covered on our show the house that Viesco built. And he lived next door to E.A. Roten in that house, in that housing area.
Oh, okay.
And they became friends, and Viesco built a lot of the houses in that area.
I'm not sure, Chrissy, do you know which ones? Have I showed you which ones that Grandpa Roten built on?
Yes.
Brick houses. But it was interesting, too, when I was born on 23rd Street, over towards the hospital and so forth. Viesco, he was a good friend of my father's, that family, and they were very well-known construction people.
Yes, they were.
And I don't think they would have built the house I was born in over there, but Viesco was very much a part of our conversations at that point.
Right.
What was the house that had something about the old Capitol in it? Or
no, what Chrissy's... on 23rd Street, it's off State Street, this house. But David told you in his interview, and I'm sure that when David was 1 year old, the Capitol burned.
Right.
And they were having his birthday dinner, and they went out.
Yeah, he felt very
hurt by that. And then later, in my memory, and I don't know why, well, I lived there at that point, but we had two of the columns from the old Capitol laying in our backyard for quite a while. And somebody told, and maybe Chris mentioned it, they might be at the Historical Society at this point.
Well, there are columns at the Historical Society.
Yeah, yeah, and Norma Paulus had a special interest in them for a while, and I was talking to Norma about it, but I haven't really looked up that.
Yeah, because there's also some columns
on the Capitol grounds. Yeah.
So those are the two places that I know of where there's columns from the
Somehow, and I don't remember seeing them, it's just in my memory. I was told, or I did live there when they had some of those columns, two of them, I think, in our backyard.
So, were you involved in the Mickey Mouse Club?
Well, you mean on Saturday down at the Elsinore? Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And our neighbor was either the MC or something, and Holly Valshock, we go. He lived down at the end of our block. And we knew him, but when I was in junior high, I know that because we tease about it. Junior high, we would all meet down there at 1 o'clock on Saturday. And Walter Jones was one of my good friends, and I've seen him later in years. And we tease about sitting and holding hands at the, at the Mickey Mouse shows.
Before we started doing these interviews, and this is what I think is so funny, is we'd never heard of this. And how big...
Oh, you hadn't?
No. David, I think, was the first one.
Oh. Well, see, David was younger, too.
And then we started of talking to people and researching it and finding out what such a big deal it was to Salem.
Oh, Polyball Shock. That was the name.
And we had so much fun connecting all these people to the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah. I mean, the picture of Wally Carson holding his Mickey Mouse Club card is priceless, you know, and to hear him talk with great excitement about going to the Mickey Mouse Club. And I went back and looked at some old historic newspapers, and it took a whole page on a Saturday of describing what was going to be the events of that day. That was quite a part of Salem history for the children.
Well, it was that age group. Mm-hmm. It was the junior high and high school age group that we line up to the end of the block, I think, to get in at 1 o'clock. But we sat with our, either Leslie or Parrish, we sat with our buddies there. And I think they had worldwide news first. I don't know why I think that. But
didn't every movie have the newsreel first?
Yeah, probably. And we'd sit there and get news from all over the world. And then pretty soon I suppose they zeroed in on one movie. I don't remember that part, but I do remember seeing worldwide news for a while.
Did you attend the frequent teenage dances, the sock hops that were sponsored around town?
Oh, well, around town.
Or was it the YMCA? I'm trying to remember.
I guess so, because I was a high Y girl or something, or what? I belonged to that club that sponsored sock hops.
I know you said you were a tomboy, but did you still go to the sock hops?
Well, I loved to dance, and we had a group of friends, boys and girls, and we liked to dance together, but we also danced in our basement. Our basement was a hub.
Oh, really?
Of where they live now. And our friends, we would gather down there, and actually, I think we did. My father had a rental that had a jukebox in it.
That was from my childhood.
Okay,
yeah.
So when the rental was being sold or something, I got it because we used that for a while. And
that was my childhood when other people were off going to their big parties and drinking and stuff. My group of friends were having root beer float parties, and this old jukebox played the old 75s and stuff. So we were dancing and having a great time down the basement with that. So the tradition kind of continued on.
My husband's family had a rumpus room in their basement with a player piano, and that's where everybody
player piano yeah,
where they
that's
all
right.
gathered too. There weren't as many options for teens to get out and do things that they have as now. And it was good, clean fun.
Good, clean fun.
Well, and it was a locale. It was sort of the center of where everybody lived. So it was always busy with young people. And
so then you go on to college.
Yes, went to Oregon State University.
And what did you learn there?
What was it called then, though?
It was university then. It was agricultural college earlier, but I'm not quite that old.
My grandfather went there when it was agricultural
college. Yeah, right. I went, and I lived in Sackett Hall, which was brand new when we moved in, and haven't been back. First it was just a general course, I think, and then I majored in education and later stayed and got my teacher certificate. And then along the way, though, it was one thing we did at that point, though, there were a group of us that had a chaperone, and we spent a summer in Hawaii and went to the University of Hawaii, and I took hula dancing as one of my hula dancing and the 25th Psalm were the classes that I took in Hawaii. And we'd take our bags and go on the bus up to college school, and we'd sit there and probably doodle when we were listening, and then we'd go down to the beach and spend the rest of the time.
Well, so those were your classes?
And those were my only two. And I got credit. And actually, the interesting part, I think it was in the 23rd Psalm that I got a D. So the next time when I went back to college that fall, it had changed my GPA. Oh. And that wasn't a good thing. But I didn't care because we had fun, and my parents had one special couple that they had gone to college with, and they sort of adopted me during that time, too. So I went to their parties, and she was a beautiful, she's Chinese, and she was a beautiful hula dancer. Mm-hmm. So at their parties, a few of them be playing the ukulele, and sometimes I'd sit up and play the ukulele with them, and then Lee DeMello would hula, and I just really had a wonderful summer. And then they lined us up, too, with some Hawaiian boys that took us out on their surfboards.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And so that was fun. Then there was another couple, that very special friends of my folks, who included me in some picnics and some stuff, too. Mm-hmm. So that was...
What an idyllic time.
Oh, it was... I was really spoiled by that. And then it was two or three. Well, we just had a special fun time that summer.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So musically, you play ukulele. Are there any other
instruments? Well, I played the flute and then the piccolo later.
Really?
In junior high and high school band through the band.
Is that how you met Dad, is through the band?
Oh, yes. Well, John went to, his family were involved in the highway department, his father. He went to Parrish, mm-hmm. and I went to Leslie, but we sat next to each other in junior high band, and maybe that's how we got acquainted. I'm not sure.
Did you have a combined band from the two?
No, but we did. On occasion, they did combine.
Oh, yes, for concerts.
And then when we went to high school, I didn't. He quit. He wasn't a flute player really, but he inherited the flute from his sister. He said, and he. But I sat next to him, and then we were part of this, when we got to high school, part of this group that kind of went to sock hops, and mm-hmm. I was involved in the GAA, which is the Women's Athletic Association or something, and we would sponsor some of these sock hops. But we'd all, some of the girls that were more sophisticated would have boyfriends and all, but we were just all buddies during those periods. Mm-hmm. And I'd play football with some of my neighbor boys when I was either maybe a sophomore in high school. We'd have fun playing football, and the nice lady-like ladies would be walking along the street trying to flirt with the boys, and I was down playing football.
Well, it sounds... those times, though, were pretty... All the entertaining mostly was done in your home. And we've had other guests who've talked about teas and coffees and how they preferred coffees to teas because they weren't quite so
prim and proper.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's a good word.
Okay, that was part of my double life.
Oh.
See? Because, you're poking the right buttons, I guess, because I would go with my very social mother and wear my little gloves and maybe, I don't remember, and go to some of these teas and parties. And for some reason, and I would have to be a lady kind of, you know, mm-hmm. there. And for some reason, I remember going to a tea, this fancy tea, up where the president of Willamette, do they still live in the house on Lincoln or
yes,
someplace?
Yes, that's still the president's house.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I've known people who lived there. And then I went to a fancy, for some reason, I remember dressing up and standing in line with all these ladies and going to that fancy party, to fancy parties like that.
And it sounds like you so enjoyed them.
I just followed my mother because she was very ladylike and she always wore a dress. And we had, she started the community concert too. She and,
yes.
I don't know if they're still doing that now or not, but we lived right across from Leslie. And so Marian Anderson was one, and there's another one I was trying to think who, but they would have a reception after the concert at my parents' house.
The other story that came actually, my sister remembered from my aunt's memorial, is that my aunt Coralie always had a crush on Harry Belafonte.
She
always
wow.
joked,
David's wife.
Yeah. She always joked that if he would have come across first, she would have married him. Well, then it came up that he was actually at our house at one time.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, I know Marian Anderson.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. that was kind of a fun thing, you know.
Well, and I think it was Marian Anderson. I should have listened, you know, some of this stuff earlier. But
if we all had listened to what our parents told us, what wealth we would have.
One of them wrote their
when a classic, name. Oh, in our grand piano. In the
on the dust.
Oh. Yeah. But the one one thing that my generation has known, or people in my where I socialized, is that mother would have these parties, and I think it was Marian Anderson that they wouldn't accept her. She was a colored lady, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't accept her in a hotel in Portland. I mean, in Salem. And so Mark Hatfield, he was a personal friend, mm-hmm. and. He drove her to Portland to another, and we were all just so unhappy that she was treated that way. But anyway, Mark was a mm-hmm. He drove her to Portland to a nice hotel in Portland at that point, because
so
she was not welcome in the Marion Hotel. Or
yeah, he treated her with respect.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. His mother was my home ec teacher, by the way.
Oh, how exciting! Yeah.
Yeah.
I pulled up on. Newspapers.com, a beautiful picture of you in your wedding dress.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was a big deal.
Beautiful.
Chrissy, you didn't wear.
No, Susie, my sister, wore that dress. And then my daughter-in-law wore that dress.
Fun, another family tradition.
It's a very special dress that was bought, I think, in San Francisco?
No. Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it was.
Or it's from there?
I can't think of the name.
But it was not found here locally.
It could have been. It could have been the one where. I talked to somebody about that dress shop.
I know that Lipman's used to have a very fancy bridal salon in their store.
Which one?
Lipman's.
Well, no, it wasn't Lipman's, and it was a individually owned store, and Bev Beakey's mother worked for her.
One of the things was funny was because Beverly's name was listed as being your matron of honor, I think, or your maid mm-hmm. of honor or something, and that you had mentioned that maybe she would come on the show too. And I thought, oh, she's still Beverly Beakey, and she's still your best friend all these years.
My godmother.
Oh, how exciting. It's obvious to me that we're going to have to carry this show on to another episode. Would you ladies be happy to join us another day? Would you do that for us?
If you can stand our bored existence.
We'd love to have you. So we will schedule that, and we'll see you on another episode.